Kelly that we're going to talk about tonight. My name is Kent Jones. I am the state engineer. And we just want, hopefully, people are going to come tonight so we can talk about some of the things that we need to do in Rush Valley as far as our water policy is concerned. We've been struggling about what to do. We've had a policy in place for the last 20 years about how we manage the groundwater appropriations in Rush Valley, and we've been very careful to hold to that policy to make sure everybody's being treated equally. About 2011, a USGS study was completed, and that information came out to show water availabilities and show groundwater basins and how they all interact in Rush Valley. And it seemed to indicate that there was some additional water out there that we hadn't really planned for. So, I mean, they just showed some additional water areas that water might be available. And so it got us to thinking, should we be changing our policy? Should we look at different things? Shortly thereafter, some large applications were filed in Rush Valley to appropriate a lot of water. And so we've got an appropriation policy that allows this much water here. And above the ceiling, these new requests came in. I thought, should we just go ahead and take action on that because of this study? Or how do we do that? So we really wanted to get some local input on that. How about how you people feel about the groundwater appropriation policy we have in place? And then we've taken some time to look into the study that was done and found some information that we thought was quite interesting and puzzling, some of it that we found. But what we're going to do tonight is just tell you a little bit about some of the things that we've been able to find out. We're going to talk a little bit about the policy, and then we're going to kind of propose some things to talk to you about, and we really are interested in getting your feedback on that about what we should do. So I'm glad you're here. I hope you all have the opportunity to sign up on the sign-up clipboards. If not, make sure you do that, because that's how we're going to keep people informed on the action that we take and as the process we go through. So if you'll do that, that would be great.
If there's anybody here who
has, you're ready to ask that. Here's one right here. And so, just make sure, and then we'll make sure that you keep informed of some of the things that we're going to be doing here with this policy and any adjustments that we make. We just, particularly you, those of you who are interested in this, we want to make sure that you're kept aware of what we're going to do. We've got some presentations that we're going to be going through tonight. James Greer is going to be talking a little about the study and some of the things that we found out. And then after that, Mike Drake, who is our regional engineer. And James is our assistant state engineer for technical services in our section. And Mike Drake is our regional engineer responsible for administering this area and working with the policies. So he's going to talk to us after that, and then we'll just see where we go from there, right?
Yep.
And so I'll let James take over, and we'll just go through it.
Okay, so as I'm going through the presentation, I'm going to be talking a lot about the hydrology and the data and the studies. If you have any questions, go ahead and raise your hand and we'll try to ask those questions because we'll be looking at figures. I don't know how big it's going to be way back there. So while we're looking at that figure, if you have a question about it, let's ask it before I get too far down the line and have to back up and forth. But we can do that anyway too. Yes?
One question before you get started. You just said there's an existing policy. What is that policy?
So
you're proposing to change it, so what is
the
policy now?
So we will go into real big detail about what that policy is. We're going to first start talking about the hydrology, and then Mike's going to get up and go over that policy in detail,
okay,
and then talk about some proposals after that.
Is it on your website?
The policy will be on the website. It is currently on the website, the current policy, and everything we present here will be on our website tomorrow as well, including a recording of the meeting. We are recording the meeting, just so you're aware. And so that will be, if we do it right, that'll be available tomorrow as well to go back and listen to if you have more questions on it. Okay. I might be turning around a lot, to make sure that I'm talking about the right slide. I'm going to go over the hydrology, the hydrogeologic information, mostly that's came from that study that the United States Geological Survey conducted out here. It's going to talk a lot about the groundwater levels and the potentiometric map of how the water is flowing through the groundwater system, how it kind of interrelates with the surface water system. We're going to talk specifically about certain areas around the valley. We're going to get and talk about the water balance, the budget of how much water is coming into the system and how much water is being discharged from the system. So I'm going to talk about all of those things today. And a little bit on the actual use estimates that we have of how much water is being pumped from wells from the valley. So to start, this is going to be kind of hard to see, but I've got a map here of Rush Valley. Right, this is Stockton here, Faust here, Vernon here, right? This is the boundaries around. And these are wells that have monitoring, long-term monitoring of those wells of where the water surface is. Okay, and I'm going to go from the top of the valley, kind of working our way down here. These wells are monitored by the USGS in a long-term program that we've had with them where they monitor wells all around the state. Okay? But what we're seeing here is the scale here is, you know, 10 to 20 feet, 20 to 30, 40, 10 to 20. We're seeing most of the water levels in the northern part of the valley are pretty steady. We're not seeing a lot of declines. One of the questions Kent said at the beginning, we want to hear feedback. So if you have data on your own wells or your areas that show different than what we're seeing here, we would love to get that information from you, right? So that we have a very complete picture of what's going on. But what we're seeing based on what the USGS is monitoring is here in the northern part of the valley, we're not seeing much change. Most of the water levels are flat, and the areas that you're seeing change, that's mostly due to climatic effects of wetter years and drier years and the aquifer responding to that through that area. Okay? As we work our way down the valley here, kind of in the middle of the valley here, we don't have a ton of long-term record, but we have some wells here, and we're seeing sort of the same thing in the middle of the valley and also on the southeastern side of the valley. These water levels are pretty steady, we're not seeing declines like we do in other areas, right? That would indicate that there's a lot of water being pumped from the area or more water being pumped from the area that's naturally being recharged to the area. This is a key indicator to us as we look around the state. As we move down in the Vernon, Faust area, there are water levels here as well. And most of these water levels are pretty steady, right? You get some variations based on the wetter years or whatnot. You do have this one here that shows in the 80s when we had wet that it did come up quite a bit. And since then, there has been some decline in that well there. As we've looked at that well, it's completed. It's a deeper well completed in one of the lower units that I'll talk about here in the future. The USGS, as they've looked at that well, they think that's indicative of a large area of pumping that's happening right around in that area, that's just adjusting to all that pumping that's going on there. Okay, it's not a dramatic effect. It's not hundreds of feet or tens of feet, but from the beginning here of 90 feet down to about 120 feet, there's been about a 30 plus to 30 swing in that well there. We've looked at other wells in that kind of area. We don't have a lot of good records for wells that are completed at that same depth. We have some other wells that are shallow that they're not showing that type of a drawdown. Okay, but all in all, when we look at all of these water levels throughout the whole area, what we take from that is that there's pretty steady water levels, they're mostly climatic effects, and there's not a lot of drawdowns that we're seeing in this area. Okay. Make sure I catch up on my notes here. This is a graphic. The USGS, in addition to monitoring water levels in all these wells everywhere, they also help produce estimates of how much water is being pumped from the wells in this area. They do it statewide in different areas that we hire them to do this for, but they also have done it here. So this is an estimate that they've done, estimating how much acre feet of water is being pumped from all the wells in the whole valley. Okay, so the maximum years here is somewhere just above 6,000 acre feet down to, you know, somewhere in 5,000. The average is somewhere between there, 5,000 to 6,000 acre feet of water that is being pumped from the wells for irrigation use, stock, all uses in the valley. Okay, we have some questions about this value. Their estimates are, there's large uncertainty in some of their estimates, and this is one of them that we think is possibly low or hasn't been allocated isn't very clear. So that's one thing that we want to investigate further as we're moving forward, is getting a better understanding of how much water is actually being pumped in the valley. Because that will help us understand the valley much better as well as we're looking at this. But that is our current estimate of the amount of pumping that's happening. Okay. And that takes us to the USGS study. This is a reference to the study. It's available online from our website, and it's also available through USGS. If you just Google, you know, Rush Valley USGS study, that'll probably be the first link that you come to. But what this study did is it looked at all this hydrologic data that we have and comes up with estimates of how much water is being recharged to the basin, how much water is being pumped, how much water is being discharged out of the basin, and where is it moving, and how is it flowing through this whole system. So they also report all their uncertainty in those numbers, because it's not easy to measure all of that information. So they give some bands on, we think it's this, but we have some uncertainty on these things. And so we have to look at that and try to interpret that, and that's what we've done to try to narrow down how much water we think is available from the groundwater systems here. This is a cross-section looking down into the ground here, a typical cross-section of this valley, Rush Valley. You might see these acronyms on my slides here. This is the Upper Basin Fill Aquifer Unit, right? So that's the Valley Fill Aquifer Unit that is pretty deep in some places. Some places it's more shallow, but it's anywhere from a couple hundred feet to 1,000 feet deep, right? They have another unit they've delineated that a Lower Basin Fill Aquifer Unit. And then most of the valley is underlain by what they have, these carbonate rocks that are bedrock, but are fractured. And they say there's water-bearing units underneath that as well. So as I talk about this, there's the Upper Basin Fill, a Lower Basin Fill, and these carbonate rocks that are below that. And some of the wells are completed in each of those three zones. But one thing that the study talked about is that they think there's a pretty good connection between those zones. There are some areas in the valley, especially as you get towards the middle of the valley, and I'll talk about those areas. You can see these kind of gray. There's a lot of clay lenses and whatnot that can inhibit flow. And they think those areas are in different parts of the valley and whatnot. But even those areas, they do believe that water does flow through those areas. It just flows much slower, right, than these unconsolidated basin fill.
When you talk about the deepest one, the lowest one, what level would you drill to get water?
So it depends on where you're at. So in some areas, like right here on the valley edges, it would be the surface, right? It crops out in the mountains. But as you get deeper into the valley, it's usually somewhere between 200 to 300 down to 1,000 feet deep to get down to that. And I'm going to show some actual cross sections throughout the valley in different places that'll talk about that. So this is going to be really small and hard to see. So this is a map of the valley. Stockton here, Vernon here. Right here, A to A prime is a cross section, A to A prime. Okay? So it's like taking a slice out of the earth right there, so we can look at it. So in that area, you can kind of see a scale here, right? 4 to 6,000, 5,000, 6,000. Right here, there is some valley fill that continues between this valley, not where we're at now, Rush Valley to this valley, right? to the Tooele Valley. So there is a possibility of a conduit that water can flow through the upper basin fill through that from Rush Valley to Tooele Valley. And there is a sort of a deep pocket there, right? But as we come over here to B prime here, you can see it from B to B prime. This area right here, got to get my bearings right, west of the Rush Lake, the geology shows that the upper basin fill is actually pretty thin through there. And it's sitting right on top of this carbonate rock that's that fractured bedrock. So it's only hundreds of feet deep through this area right here. Okay. As we move farther down, we have C to C prime here. We do have these areas where you have much larger, deeper basin fill. Okay, and as you move towards the center of the valley, you start seeing more of these clay layers. So the water out here is in what we call an unconfined aquifer. It's the water seeping in, and there's nothing confining it down like a clay layer. And as you move deeper into the valley, it's kind of underneath those clay layers. And as you punch a well in there, the water level will rise up higher in that well, right? That's what happens. Out here, if you punch a well in here, the water will stay wherever it's at in that with the aquifer around it. But if you punch a well down here through this clay layer, it might actually rise up above as it's being pushed underneath that and allowed to rise up in that well through that clay layer. Okay? So this is one of the areas that they talk about that has good producing wells. Right along the Clover Creek drainage right through here. Okay? Now, moving down to the valley, we have a cross section that comes from D here to D prime. And you can kind of see there's a lot of interesting things going on here. So you have this valley fill aquifer that gets pretty deep. And then there's some faulting and some uplift that happened out there in the middle of that valley as you're moving up. And there's a lot of clay layers right around and through here. And the valley fill actually pinches out as you're, not completely, but as you get north there. So as you can see, I'm somewhere right around in this area right here that corresponds to this. And so what that's doing is all that water is getting in that aquifer, and it's actually being forced out of the aquifer and coming out in this area here. Okay? So there's a large aquifer that goes down, and it comes out, and it flows to the aquifer, and it's coming back up as springs and seeps and flowing back into the creek in that area. Right? That's what the USGS has reported they believe is happening in that area. Then my last cross-section, I know you guys are sad because this is my last cross-section. But here from E to E prime, you see that there is the upper basin fill aquifer out through here. It exists. It continues for a long ways. But they show that this area out here, there's a lot of tighter sediments. It doesn't produce as good of wells, and the water is moving very slowly through that area. And in fact, I'll get to that later. Are there any questions about the geology before I move on about the different units and whatnot? Okay. Let me catch up here.
Oh, wait, I got one question.
Yes.
What about... I looked at the report, which I read yesterday, and so mentioned also the possibility of, besides, you know, the recharge that's happening, the discharge, and you try to hope that one more than the other, mm-hmm. Is the possibility that some of the water, that some of the aquifers are fossil. You know, they're, you know, leftovers from, you know, when you had one of the Lake Bonnevilles here, and just essentially the pressure of the water just... essentially pushing its way down there, in there. And I cannot remember how much of the pull was from those aquifers. You know, how much is there of fossil water, essentially? The stuff that's not getting recharged, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And hopefully I can answer that question. as we look at this basin as a whole, I'm going to be talking a lot about the water budget here in just a second. But as we look at this, I mean, there's a lot of water that has filled up these aquifers from, you know, ancient times and whatnot. But as we look at it as one continuous unit, the amount of water coming in each year is basically coming in, flowing through, and there's the same amount of water that's being discharged every year from this aquifer. And there isn't really these large units that aren't interacting with that system now. I mean, it was filled up from years and years and years of history, right? And so there's hundreds of thousands, millions of probably acre feet of water down there. But the amount that's coming in and coming out each year, that all interacts. And if you start pulling more water here, even though that water is ancient and old, that's maybe deeper, there is a connection there, and it could impact, even though it's long time ago was put into those locations. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Another question. Yeah. So in cross section C, you said there's some good producing wells along there. So I guess I want you to classify what you mean by good producing wells.
Way to stick your foot in.
Yeah.
So
honestly, I don't know what the wells are producing GPM or whatnot. The report just shows that those are the well. That location is the area that has the wells that are producing the best. I don't know what the GPM of those wells are. You might know better than I.
Good answer. Very low. Very little.
Very little. That's great feedback that we'd love to hear. What are these wells producing in these areas? What is happening? Yes.
So you say that USGS monitors these wells that you're showing us.
They monitor the water level in the wells.
Okay. Over time.
Over time, yep.
Okay. And so did they just go pick those wells that they were going to monitor, or is that something you can request that they do, and that's where you're getting this, or...
So I just want to make sure your question is done. Okay. So what we've done is they've developed relationships over the years with people that allow them to measure wells. They try to find wells that aren't actively being used, so they're not influenced by pumping that's happening at that well. But they've looked for areas around the state as a while to see locations where they can monitor wells and get agreements by whoever owns those wells or those locations to monitor them. And they look for wells that they have a long-term record. But it's occasionally we'll say, hey, we want more information in this area. Go find some wells in this area, and let's see
so
if we can work out some deal.
That.
Yes, they do.
But can you request that?
You can request them to come measure your well. They might not have the staff and time and resources to measure your given well, but they're usually very willing.
I just pulled up the report, and there's a table that gives that information. However, what they did was, it looks like they did like a series of tests. So in other words, it's only at a specific point in time. For example, like they pulled like one well and, they pulled it from back in July 2002, and it was pulled from, 280 feet down, and they were getting 20 gallons per minute for, it says 28 hours. And then the test ended.
They have done some pump tests at certain wells to actually pump them to see what the aquifer capacities are and whatnot at those locations. But the water levels are long-term that they've been measuring for, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50, 60 years sometimes. Now, they will, if there's like a well here that for whatever reason can't be measured anymore, they try to find one nearby that represents it and look out, because they love to see those long-term records. That's really what helps us. But if you have locations, I'm sure we would entertain the opportunity to say, hey, if we could add that to our inventory and start measuring it long-term. They charge us for that, but if it's information we want and it's good, we're more than willing to entertain that. I love data. So. Okay. This is the other key point of this study, right? They looked at this groundwater balance. How much water is recharging into this aquifer? How much water is discharging out of this aquifer? How is it all interconnected and interrelated? So recharge, I'll use that term a lot, right? That's water that is seeping down into the ground and actually making it down into the groundwater system. Most of that comes from precipitation up into the mountains that seeps down into the mountain block and down through that mountain block into the valley fill aquifer. Some of it's coming out of those streams and then seeps down into the valley fill through the stream flow. Some of it's return flow from irrigation. And then how much is actually in that aquifer getting discharged back out, right? It's flowing back into the streams, flowing into wetland areas, springs, or being pumped out of the wells. Or could actually be flowing out of the valley underground, like into Tooele Valley or into the Cedar Valley to the east, right? Those are some of the components they looked at. So the USGS does, using the best science they have available for this very complicated system, try to estimate these values of recharge and discharge for the whole valley.
Isn't that very misleading when you said that the water from irrigation is counted as recharge?
So not, maybe I can clarify, it's not all the water that's counted as recharge. They look at how much water you apply to your fields, and a lot of that's used by the field and evaporated off. And there's a small component that might get past the root zone and percolate down. And that's just the part they look at as recharge. Just that small component that isn't being used by the field, but you need to get down so it can infiltrate down into the soil. So, and they have estimates of how much they think is actually bypassing the root zone and recharging the aquifer. But in this area, it's actually pretty small. Does that answer your question?
Well, not really, because that water come out of the aquifer to start with.
Yeah, and they actually look at that as well. They say, was this from a surface source or was this from a groundwater source? And they look at that balance as best they can to try to make sure they're not double counting or they're making sure they're counting everything accurately. They do their best to try to account for that. So, recharge. So they look at how much precipitation is falling. They have these complicated models that try to look at that, look at how much water is being used by the native vegetation in the mountains, how much comes out as stream flow, and how much of that water actually percolates down into the ground, into the system. And they calibrate that as best they can. So they come up with these estimates of what the recharge is for all of the valley. Okay. The actual number of recharge for the valley, is it on the slide? I have it later on. So I'll talk about that later on. Then they look at how much is being discharged from the valley, right? There are no surface water that's actually leaving this valley, right? So a majority of the discharge from this groundwater system, specifically before any development, you know, like before man, right, would have been water that was seeping out through the ground, and it was being used by what they've mapped out as all this phreatophytes or native vegetation that's dipping down into that groundwater system, consuming that water and evaporating it off or using it to survive and grow out in these valleys. This is very common in a lot of these valleys up and down the western part of Utah. You have a lot of water coming as mountains flowing in through these groundwater systems, coming out to the middle of the system, being forced up through these clay layers, and being used by the natural vegetation in the middle of these valleys. Okay, so they map out that natural vegetation and come up with estimates of how much water is possibly being used by all that natural vegetation from the groundwater system. Okay, they also look at well withdrawals, those estimates that we talked about that's being pumped out of that aquifer. They look at springs that's discharging, and they estimate subsurface outflow, how much water is flowing out of the valley to these other basins. They basically take that cross-section that they looked at the head difference of the water levels and that permeability of that soil to say, okay, how much water could possibly be flowing out of this valley through the ground, and they come up with estimates for that as well. And I'll go into detail about what they've estimated. A big finding from this study, this shows the water levels, and this might be hard to see. So you have the Stansberry Mountains here, right? And the Ochre Mountains here. So you have water that's recharged at these mountains. It comes down in and it mostly flows out, right? From the mountain blocks down towards the valley centers. And that's what they're showing here. These are the water level contours of the shape of the surface of the groundwater system. And they've got these arrows here showing where they think the predominant flow patterns are for this aquifer. Okay, this is a graphic right out of their study.
So on the Ochres, well, let's start on the Stansberries. Does it flow east to west, not north to south?
Yes, they believe the water flows from east to west here. It flows down throughout, kind of follows the Clover Creek drainage down towards the center of the valley. Yes. They actually, in this study, which is something different in previous studies, they do not believe through this gap up here that there's any water flowing north through that area right there, based on the water levels and the geology of that area. So they do believe over here on this side, the Stockton Bar area, right, that there is some water that could possibly be flowing through that area towards Tooele. That's one of the areas of uncertainty that we have with this study, is previous studies said that that could be as high as 5,000 acre feet of water, where this study shows that it's much smaller, something on the order of 0 to 500, 600 acre feet of water, based on their analysis. So that's one of the uncertainties we have, is that 0 or 5,000? Right, but that's kind of the uncertainties we have to deal with in this area. Down here, you have the water flowing off the mountain block down here, which is not quite as large and produces as much water as you do see from the Ochres, but it flows south to north, and they believe most of it actually is, because of that geology and those clay layers, it's being forced up and actually is discharging to areas in here. Okay? Over here in the southwest, you see these water levels? They believe that there is very minimal recharge occurring from these mountains over here. Just not very much. And that's indicative of the water levels that we're seeing here. They're just very flat, very slow moving, not a lot of water in the southeastern part of the valley. But if the water that is there is slowly moving and possibly discharging through the passes there towards Cedar Valley. But once again, they think it's a very small amount. Somewhere in the order of 0 to 500, 300 acre feet could possibly be discharging that way.
So on the Ochre side, which would be by Stockton, Ophir, and that area,
yes.
That water is draining, you said it goes out the Stockton Bar, possibly.
Some of it does.
So does it go from east to west?
Yes.
To go north, draining jobs out of the Stockton Bar into the Tooele Valley.
So right here they think there is, most of it goes east to west, and they believe most of it naturally would discharge to native vegetation springs, to Rush Lake area, through that area right there. But they do believe there could be a small portion of that water that flows right here north once it gets to the center. It kind of moves the center of the valley, and a small portion could be flowing north. Okay, but what the study did say is we believe there is definitely a groundwater divide. The water recharged in this northern part of the area flows to the center of the valley and is discharged here. The water flow that's recharged in the southern, southwestern flows and discharges here to an area in the southwest, the very northern part of the southwestern area, and the water in the southeast flows and discharges to native vegetation here, and a small portion might be flowing out. But they clearly identify three distinct zones in this groundwater system. Okay? And those are identifying those zones to make it a little easier to see, I hope. Okay? Here's another table right out of the report. Sorry, it's small. I wish this screen was a little farther forward. This is their estimate of all of those components. How much is recharging each one of those zones? How much is discharging from each one of those zones? So I want to highlight some things here, right? Valley total, right? They have some numbers here, and they have these huge bars of uncertainty, 50%, right? That means that number could be 50% higher, 50% lower. It's very, very large, right? They have how much they think is discharging, and it could be 30% higher or lower. Like I said, there is this water that could be flowing out of the Tooele Valley or the Rush Valley, and they've got 170% error bar on that, right? Okay. And this might sound silly, but these are very hard things to measure, and they're doing the best they can. And that's just how we have to deal with it all over the state. One of the things that we have looked at, like we said, they had this valley-wide total of 6,200 acre-feet of well discharge. And they placed a large majority of that in the Vernon area. That, let me go back, in this area of well discharge. They didn't put, in their study, very much happening in the northern Rush Valley area, which we believe is inaccurate. We believe there's much more pumping going on there. In fact, we've done some just initial surveys of looking at ag land that we know is being supplied by solely groundwater sources. So we know that that number is too low. What we don't know right now, and we're going to investigate further, is does that just mean that this number should have been reallocated here, or is the whole valley-wide total, should it go up? And we're going to look at that and try to figure that out in better detail in the future. That's one of the things that we still have some uncertainty about that we're going to study better. Question.
So in that northern Rush Valley, that 610, that's 610 what?
Oh, these values are in acre feet.
Well, I pump more than that on my ranch.
That's what we're saying.
There's obviously something wrong there.
I pump 2,000 on my ranch.
Yeah. So we obviously know that these well pumping estimates, there's something wrong there. So we're currently looking at how are we going to get a better understanding of what that is and what that will take. It's not an easy undertaking, but we're going to try to do that this next year. Right, Mike? Not saying anything wrong? Okay. So one thing I want to point out, let's go back to my budget slide. So the USGS study, they looked at how much water is recharging into the mountain block and in the aquifer, and then they look at how much is coming back out in the streams, and they try to balance all of that. And so these budget estimates that they have here include the water that's coming into the mountain block and going out into the streams. So we were tasked at looking at, okay, we got to try to take that out and just look at what's getting down into the valley fill aquifer. So we've attempted to do that, okay, by looking at their values. So this is our breakdown of each one of those areas. This is how much they said total's happening in the valley. This is precipitation, how much total recharge. This is the total discharge. Okay, and we've tried to balance those, and we weighted them based on their uncertainty to come up with We did modify some of these, saying, you know what, they said it was 400 to 800. We know it's at least 2,000. We know it's probably more based on your comment right there, right? So this number is probably even lower than it should be, okay? So then we looked at the Mallee Valley, and then we tried to separate out just the valley fill. So we come, look at all those things, separate that out, and come up with what we believe is the total amount of recharge and discharge estimate from just the valley fill aquifer in the northern area. Okay? There's a lot of uncertainty on these numbers, but this is our best engineering estimate that we can come up with the information that we have now. Okay? So this is the Vernon, the northern area. So it's somewhere around 16,000, 17,000 acre feet coming in and coming out of that groundwater system. This is the Vernon area. Once again, we looked at all those things. We modified this well pumping. Maybe it's lower because they misallocated where that pumping was. But maybe it is still that 6,900, and they just missed the pumping that they should have accounted for. So we kind of took that into account. Once again, we separated out to just look at the valley only. We come up in that Verdon area, something around 10,000 acre feet of water getting into that valley fill, 10,000 acre feet coming back out to those discharge zones, either through ET or from the wells. The southeastern area, there's much less water estimated, somewhere around 2,300 acre feet in the southeastern portion of those three zones that we talked about. One other thing to note, there's the subsurface outflow numbers, right? We mentioned we've come up with what the USGS has estimated. There are large uncertainties in those numbers, right? If this is the northern area, this is 600, that could go up to 5,000. That means this number goes up. That means this number goes up, right? So, or one of these numbers could be too high, and that causes all these numbers to come down. And so it's kind of a balancing effort. And we've got to look at it based on our knowledge of other systems, the information that's provided, and come up with our best estimates. And that's what we've tried to do here today and present. But we would love to get feedback on this, others to look at it as well, talk about where we might have been inaccurate, where we didn't account for things like well pumping that's currently existing that we don't know about. And that's the kind of feedback we'd love to get. Discharge areas that maybe we haven't accounted for, if you want to look deep into the study as well. And don't want to give you a precursor to mics. That's the end of the information I was going to present today on the hydrology. If you have more questions, I'll be here after. You can come up and talk to me, or you can contact me at any time. And we can talk through it and work through it, come into our office or whatnot. We want this to be a very public, open process so that we can all understand this the best we can.
On the recharge per year, what did you say? Is that per year?
Yes.
How much is recharge?
Yeah, all of this is per year, long-term averages. Obviously, there's years that are wetter and there's more recharge that happens. There's years that are drier, there's less. They try to take that into account and look at long-term averages on all these numbers. Yes?
This is a 2011 study. Is that the most recent study? Has there been one since this?
No, this is the most recent study.
So this is 7 years old.
This study is 7 years old. And to put it in context, studies like this take usually about 3 to 4 years to actually complete from when we start to when they end. They're long. They take a lot of work. They do a lot of field work. But yes, this is the most recent study that we've done. They're still collecting data.
7 years with the weather, so do these figures remain accurate in 7 years?
Because they look at long-term averages, we feel like they are pretty accurate. They can always be improved, and things do change. But it is the best information that we have available at this time. Question?
Was this done specifically to find out if there's a large pool of untapped water that can be pumped from Rush Valley out to an alternate location? Is that the point of this? Or what's the, why?
Why was the study initiated?
Yeah, why are we doing this? Why? Yeah.
So we, as the, you know, we regulate all these basins around the state. And we are always looking for better information so that we can understand these systems. Like I think Kent said, those applications that were filed came way after the study. This wasn't in response to anything that happened. We just periodically look around the state to try to look at areas where we feel like we need more information. We look at these water levels and try to decide, is there something we need to understand better here based on what we're doing? And so we initiated this study back 2006. And part of it had to do, I believe, I wasn't there at the time, there was a lot of development was happening all over the state, including in this area. We were getting a lot of requests. And so it was, maybe we should try to gather more information and look at this area because it hadn't been studied since the 70s. So that's what I think initiated that study.
Yeah, it was just an effort to update and understand better the water resources here because we felt like the ability to make estimates and understand the systems that had improved over that period was So it wasn't, there was no specific motive except to better understand since we are allocating water resources in the state.
Yeah, and we're doing these studies all over the state. This is not unique just to this valley. We have four or five different studies going on in many different valleys right now. Question.
So you're, as I look at these last three pictures that you put up there, the north, the Vernon, and the south, east, I think it was, it showed that recharge was about equal to discharge.
But we, we tried to match them. Their estimates, they have these ranges. We tried to say, okay, this range is here, this range is here. We looked at the valley and tried to come up with one balanced number. Right? There are these large ranges, but we had to come up with one number to manage against. And that's what we've tried to do here.
James, what you might want to help people understand is that the whole goal when they do these studies is trying to look at recharge independent from discharge.
Yes.
And measure those things as best they can. And their test to understand whether they've gotten close or not is to look and see if those two things balance. Because the assumption is you're in the equilibrium system.
Correct. So they attempt to do that, and there was some overlap, and that's kind of where we set our values based on that overlap and the uncertainty in those numbers. All right, well, I'm going to turn the time to Mike, who is going to talk more about the policies and some of the information.
Thanks. Yeah, so we have these numbers, my goal is to then convey to you kind of what they mean from a policy standpoint, and then we'll talk about the existing policy, and then we'll talk about what we're proposing tonight. And so we'll just get into that. So if you will remember these numbers, these numbers here, the balance, what we're going to call the balanced recharge and discharge, are going to be carried over to this next table that I'm going to put in front of you, okay? And that's for each of the sub areas. All right. And so this first table is just to get us into this idea here, right? And so what this is showing is each of those sub areas, and then we're in that first column after the sub area. We've given you kind of a snapshot of what we think is going on in the area, and you can see that we think the groundwater level in the northern area and in the southeast area are steady. We don't see a lot of decline there. And if you remember back to those water levels, there was that one well in Vernon that was showing some decline. So the other wells weren't, and so we think that area is mostly steady. There's that one well, so that gives us a little bit of question there, but we don't see that carrying over to other wells, and so we're going to say that that's mostly steady. Now the third column there, you see that balanced recharge and discharge number, okay? That's a number you're going to see on this slide and the next slide. And that's the amount of water we think is down in the aquifer that can be used in one way or another. Okay, so remember that number. And then the fourth column is the estimated well withdrawal. This is, again, carried over from those three slides just before this. This is our best guess right now as to what that is. That's a number, like James said, that needs to be refined, but we're going to go with the numbers we have right now for the purpose we're talking about tonight. Now, if we take the balanced recharge and discharge and subtract the well withdrawal, then we come up with an estimated water surplus based on actual pumping, or at least our best guess right now as to what the actual well pumping is. And so you can see from this that if those numbers are correct, there's quite a bit of water that is there left to be appropriated, all right, or left to be used. Okay, so this is one way of looking at it, right? The story's not complete though, and so we're going to go on to this next slide because there's a few different ways to look at it. All right, this one's a complicated table, so I'll walk you through it. And again, we've carried over the balanced recharge discharge, okay. And then I've also carried over that surplus based on well withdrawal. Now we've also gone and we've done an inventory of all of the existing water rights in each of these three areas, and we've calculated the diversion and the depletion for those water rights. And what that means, the diversion is the amount of water that if you're irrigating, for example, an acre of land, it's the amount of water in a year that you're going to pump out of the ground and put onto that field. Okay, but that's not the amount of water that the crop actually consumes. Some of that water runs off the property. Some of that soaks back into the ground, as we've talked about, and recharges the aquifer. But that amount of water that you're going to pump out of the ground is the diversion. Okay, the depletion is the amount of water that is actually consumed by that crop or by some other water use. Okay, so those are those two numbers. Diversion, the amount of water you pump out of the ground. Depletion is the amount of water that's actually consumed by the use and is lost to the hydrologic basin. Does that make sense? And so then we've calculated a surplus based on those two numbers. Now, as you look across there, you can see that depending on how you choose to look at it, the story can change a little bit. In the north area, if we're looking at well withdrawal, it shows quite a bit of water is available. If we go look at just the existing water rights and say, what's the potential discharge or potential amount of water we could be diverting out of the ground for the uses and the water rights we have, you can see that that surplus drops quite a bit. We go down to 1,500 acre feet is what's available. However, if we choose to look at it from a depletion point of view, then we're somewhere in between the two. All right? And you can see on the other areas what story it's telling for each of those areas. All right, and then the last aspect that we need to look at is there are some unapproved applications in all three areas, and some of them are quite substantial. And depending on the actual scenario here, could consume quite a bit of this surplus water that's available. Okay, any questions on that? These are kind of the numbers we're going to be working with as we go to develop our policy here. And I guess the takeaway from this is we do believe there is some water available. And you might ask yourself, all right, which one of these surpluses is right? Well, they're all right to some degree, but not one of them is necessarily wrong. This is kind of part of groundwater policy development. It's hard to determine exactly what that is.
Question: just comparing what the USGS, just for the northern, they're showing in their report 21.8 is the total precipitation, the total recharge, and then after deducting well discharge, discharge to springs, and the evapotranspiration, they show a discharge of 19.8. So that's a 2,000 acre foot availability, and you're showing 16.7. Help me understand why. It almost looks like evapotranspiration is not being considered in what you've put up there versus what USGS put up. Am I missing something?
Well, and so James kind of talked about this. There was some balancing that we did here, and these slides are what addressed that. And there were differences between the recharge estimates and the discharge estimates, and what we would expect is that they would be in equilibrium. All right, and so one estimates it here, one estimates it here. There is some overlap, and so we're going to try and balance it in a write up. That leads to either a reduction or an increase of one or the other.
Okay.
All right, so I think that might be the source of that. Is that correct?
I think you're missing this question.
I'm sorry.
So the question is just that the available water balance in the northern Rush Valley from USGS is 2,000 acre feet. And your net of withdrawals versus recharge is 16.7. So we've got a 14,700 acre foot discrepancy with what you put up versus what USGS does.
So that's what the system is doing naturally. It's consuming all the water that's recharged to the system. So in Utah, we're a sustainable appropriation state, and so we don't try to use more water than enters the aquifer. And so what we end up doing is trading natural ET for the uses we want. So as we draw the water levels down, the natural vegetation will die, springs will die, and you'll grow crops. That's what happens.
Okay.
So there's just not... We're assuming that we'll start with the natural triadophytes. Strong's law, when we take water from something, something will die. But that's the anticipation, is that water would come to a better use, which would be crop production versus triadophytes.
That's correct.
Okay, great.
Any other questions?
You're really flawed on your well usage up there. In the northern area. There's
we
no,
know that.
I think, yeah. And we went and looked, and I'm guessing we probably actually looked at your farm. And that was one of the big ones that I knew about that convinced me that, yeah, we got a lot more than 600 acre feet of pumping going on in the north. And the study assigned 10% to northern Rush Valley and 90% of the pumping that they tabulated to Vernon. And I knew that number wasn't correct. So we, not knowing precisely what it is, we assigned that value of 2,000, but it's higher. But it doesn't really change the story. A 1,000 acre feet or so isn't going to change the final conclusion, depending on, again, I guess how you decide to look at it, whether it's on diversion or depletion or ultimately on just well withdrawals. Okay? Now, one interesting thing that you can see from these various surpluses is a lot of these existing water rights are not being fully utilized, the existing water rights that we have. If they were being fully utilized, then the well withdrawal number and the surplus based on diversion would be a lot closer to each other. But they're not. And so we have a little bit of a discrepancy between the amount of paper water right that we have and the amount of actual pumping that we have going on.
But that could be because the numbers that you've collected aren't correct.
It could. It certainly could. Yeah, it's possible. We went through and we looked at water right by water right, and said, okay, if this water right was fully used for the uses that it's approved for, what would it demand from the system, right? Because if you have one of those water rights, you're not necessarily going to be giving it up, right? That water right at some point might come into full use. Some of them might not be. Some of them might fall out of use and ultimately be abandoned. We're trying to play the long game here, and we need to account for the water rights that will ultimately be brought into full use at some point.
Are you factoring in proved up water and
perfected and approved water rights?
Because there's a difference there.
Yeah. So this number, this right here is perfected and approved water rights. That's what it's based on. It's not just perfected water rights, it's approved ones as well. Approved applications to procreate. Okay, so we're...
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
On the water rights you're talking about, does it distinguish between those that are running off of wells and those running off of springs?
Yeah, it does, and it was part of our review. And what we did... Well, first off, we did not consider surface water rights. We consider that that's not part of this groundwater block that we're trying to evaluate here. Our goal here is a groundwater appropriation policy, not a surface water. So we first removed that, okay? And then if the springs appeared to be part of this valley block of water, then we included them. If they appeared to be something that was more related to the mountain block that we removed earlier, then we didn't count that in this in the analysis. So a little bit of interpretation, but we did our best to try and arrive at that number. Okay. All right. None of this probably answers a ton of questions, right? I mean, there's still a lot of questions here, and we certainly share those concerns. And let me just go through some of our concerns, different things that we're still worried about. And I think you guys will probably share all of these concerns with us.
We're concerned about the levels of uncertainty in the recharge and discharge estimates. There's things that are very uncertain. How much water is actually going towards Twila Valley, you know? And that is another one of the concerns we have. The inaccuracy of the well withdrawal estimates in USGS's studies. We're concerned about that. I mean, the fact that they split it that way, and that we know for a fact that there's over 2,000 acre feet of water being pumped in Northern Rush Valley just from one farm tells us that, right? Brackish water. In the past we had reports of brackish water in various locations. Now, searching all of the well logs that I was able to find, it seems to be located towards Rush Lake, but it's a concern that I know Kent years ago heard a lot about was brackish water being encountered in various areas. So we're concerned that okay, maybe we calculate all this water, but is it actually usable water? Can it be used for a good purpose? We're concerned about possible interference with wells, and that was something that was happening back in the day when our policy first came into place. The difference between actual use and the total value of or the potential diversion and depletion of the existing water rights. Why is there such a difference between that? Is there some physical thing that is preventing a lot of these water rights from being put to use? That's something we were concerned about and want to know more about. And then we're concerned about speculation. One of the big reasons we put a policy in place originally was because of intense speculation in water back in the 1980s when we first did this. And it was to the point that we needed to put the brakes on it in some way to keep up. I mean, we could be looking right now, if we didn't put the brakes on it there, we could be looking what did we see here? We saw 15,000. We could be looking at 30, 40,000 acre feet of water if a limit didn't get imposed at some point. Okay, so the long and short of it, we see reason to still be cautious. Okay, and so with that, this is in direct answer to a question we had, is some quick current policy background. All right, the current policy dates to about 1982, as far as we can tell. You know, some of this is pre-computer, so we have to extract it from various documents. But back at that time, it was in response to a lot of large applications coming into the office, reports of well interference, brackish water, and a lot of speculation. So we implemented this limit of 0.1 CFS per application. It didn't really define the uses. That came a little bit later. And the records we find show that came into place in about 1999. And that's when a limit of uses was first put in place. And it describes one house, 1 acre of irrigation, and some limited stock watering, is what it says. And then finally, in 2008, we have the present policy in the Rush Valley of 4.73 acre feet per application, which is a house, 10 animals, and an acre of irrigation. Okay, so that's where we are right now. That bottom one is where we are right now. So getting to the fun part here, this is probably why you're all here, is the proposed policy changes. And this is what we want your feedback on. We want to know what you think. Okay, we are proposing, as James described, the report subdivided Rush Valley into three different distinct sub-areas. And we're proposing that this policy respect those sub-basins. And so we're proposing a different policy for each area. The southeastern Rush Valley, the Vernon area, and the northern Rush Valley. And so we'll go through each one of these individually and talk about what we're proposing. So starting with the southeast area, we're proposing that this area be restricted further, because if you remember back with on that table, it showed that there wasn't much water available according to this study. And so we're proposing that it be open only to small domestic applications. And that is, for example, 1.73 acre feet, which is calculated out to be one house, 10 animals, and 1/4 acre of irrigation.
Okay, and then since we're treating these as individual sub-basins, we would propose that the that it be closed to change applications moving water from outside of the sub-area. So you wouldn't be able to move water from Vernon over to the southeast area. Okay? And vice versa. And this restriction you'll see on each of the sub-areas, and so if you take it all together, then if you, the water you have stays in the sub-area that the water right started with. Okay? All right, the Vernon area. We're proposing no change in this area. Well, if you remember, we didn't see a lot of well decline. There was that one well that was declining, but we also didn't see a ton of water in this area. The calculation showed some, but we think that the amount of water that's available meets the expectations and the goals of the current policy. And so we're proposing that not change, that continue as it currently is, where a limit of 4.73 acre feet per application, which is an acre of irrigation, one house, and 10 animals. And again, this would be close to moving water from outside of the sub-basin into it. Okay? So in the north areas where we're proposing, I guess, an increase, this is the area that showed the most amount of water, depending on, regardless of how you looked at it. And so we're proposing a new appropriation limit in this area of 20 acre feet per application. And so, for example, you can see two examples up there. The first one, this would allow for 5 acres of irrigation. Or if you're doing a house and some animals, and you could do a house, 20 animals, and about 4.75 acres of irrigation. And again, you would this would be close to change applications moving water from outside of the sub area. Okay, and so just a couple final details, and then this is where we're going to turn it over to you, and we want to know what you think, what your thoughts are. One big question might be what to do with pending applications, and what we're proposing is that the pending applications will be processed based on this new policy if it's adopted, and that any applications filed from this date forward would also be according to this new policy for the Rush Valley area. Okay, so we were here to solicit comment, and there will be we're proposing a 30-day. We actually have had a request extended to 60 days, and we can consider that and talk about that. But right now, we're imposing a 30-day comment period. You let us know what you think. Let us know what your observations are. So that extends out. December 8th is a Saturday, so we'll take it out to the Monday after that. So December 10th is what we're proposing. And the final policy will be posted up to our website. Here's the address. Email address, phone number if you want to call and talk to someone. All of that information is available, and that is also on the handout that was out on the table. And so make sure you grab one of those. I think we should have enough to do that. So we want to hear, you know, if you have questions, and we want to hear questions. If you have comments, we want to hear comments. What's going on here? No, it's dying. I don't have my final slide. I was going to put up some questions to kind of guide the discussion here. Maybe James will get it up, and we'll just leave it up there. But the first question was, what is your experience with the water supply in the Rush Valley area? And then what concerns do you have if the proposed policy is adopted? We want to hear what you think, and so I guess it's the point where we turn it over to you. And is there anything, any additional questions about this? Any comments?
So in the past in Rush Valley, I've seen a number of applications prior to what's being proposed, where someone's trying to get out ahead of this, and they're going to file 10 applications to appropriate for the limit, and all of a sudden they can irrigate 10 acres. It was speculative. They were denied. It was in Jerry Olds' era when that was done. And I think that's a concern. All you have really to base that on is speculation, or someone's trying to monopolize the water right. But if you, we just Everyone in this valley just saw 6,000 acre feet of application come through in the last 3 years.
Yes.
And so I think that's why most everyone is here and concerned about that. And so that's a concern, I guess, that I would have, is that what's to stop someone from applying for 45 applications of 20 acre feet? That's a lot quicker to get up to a high value or a higher number of acre feet.
Yeah. It's a good concern, and it's...
What was the question?
So the question was, what's to stop someone from filing 20 or 30 or 40 of these applications and pile up a lot of water? And it's a legitimate concern, and it's something that we've talked about, and I guess we want to know your thoughts and what you think about it, and it's something that... we'll consider and perhaps add into the what's been done in the past is you were limited to one application. You needed to submit proof on that, and then you could file a new application to appropriate at that point. And that's what's been done up till now. And so that's something we can consider. Is there something that either of you wanted to say about that? No? Any other questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, of course, my concern is we got 30 days here, and we've already established that we don't have good data on wells, so usage. So that concerns me somewhat. Also, I'm concerned, we haven't been where we're at for a long time, like some of the folks in this room, but since the 50s we've been there, and this is the least amount of water that I've seen at my place in my lifetime.
Yeah,
I have a well that flows if I don't pump it. That's been the history of my well. I turn it off, sometimes it flows within a couple of days. Of course, in the 80s I turned it off and it flowed right off.
Yeah.
But last year, I turned it off. It took 2.5 months before it flowed. This year, I turned it off. It's still not flowing. The spring isn't even wet. The ground's not even wet where I see it from. So we're in a drought. I understand that. And we're looking at long-term things, but... That's a concern that I have. I'm going to do some things to hopefully, I've never had to do this before, but I'm going to have to maybe go a little deeper, put a little bigger motor on. I don't know. I couldn't pump enough water. I was pumping air this year. Hmm. And that's never happened before.
Yeah,
it's been
a historically bad year this year.
That concerns me that we got all this extra water.
Yeah, and I guess the thing to understand, and this is, like you said, it's long-term averages, and we are in the midst of a historically bad year. It's been really bad. I've seen a lot of replacement well applications and well renovation applications come in with people wanting to deepen or further develop their wells, a lot of them this year, and it's in response to the drought. I think this is the year where you find out if your well's a little bit too shallow, I think. So, but it's a good concern, I think the numbers seem to indicate that there is some water there, at least when you consider that long-term average. Could it be that years like this that might not be the case, perhaps, yeah.
Back to the 80s.
Yeah.
I had too much water.
Get it off your land, right?
Yeah, right.
Yes, sir.
You said that there's on the northern, there's 20 acre feet per application.
That's what we're proposing.
Okay, so how many acre feet is there available? If we don't have any data, then the data is bad.
Well, we're working as best as we can with the information we have, and well, we have some doubt about the well. The well withdrawal, I don't think it's, we're coming to find out that it's probably more than 2,000. But even if it's 5,000 acre feet, that doesn't change that number substantially, right? I mean, you'll take a few thousand more, but there's still, whoops, I'm moving. There's still a lot of water, at least according to the study, and this is the best available information we have, there's still a lot of water available. So the policy is intended to permit people to come in and develop that water if they can find it.
So if there are applications out there that have not been proven up or perfected, can people make changes to those applications to increase that amount from the 4.73 to the 20 acre feet?
Not to increase, no. So each water right would be limited to its present value. So you'd have to make a new application to take it up to this new limit if that were adopted.
So each existing appropriation at the 4.73 could reapply to increase it to the 20.
Well, could apply for a new one. I mean, if you've got uses in place, submit your proof and then file for a new application appropriate under this new policy, and then develop the additional acreage that we think might be available, at least in the northern area.
So you're saying that if you can do roughly on that 14,000, you could do 735 applications?
Did you do the math there? I actually did the math myself, and what I went and looked at the average, the number of applications we've had per year for the last 7 or 8 years, and to try and inform Kent so we could make some of these decisions. And at that rate, now maybe the rate increases, but at that rate at 4.73, it was going to be taking about 400 years to use up that amount of water. And I guess we just didn't feel like that was a reasonable level of development. And if the water's there, then it should be made available to use if the water can be found. Because ultimately, the water rights are kind of like, it's a fishing license, right? There's no guarantee of water. You're going to have to go find it. Is it there? It depends on where you are, right? James talked about certain areas where that aquifer is very, very thin. And there's not much meat to it. And those areas are probably not good areas to go find it. There's other areas that might be. But if you can find it and if you can develop it, ultimately, state statute kind of directs us to develop this resource that the state has, this resource of water. And so we're going to bring order to this, you know, and that's why back in the 80s, lacking information, we clamped down, but now that we have some information that seems to indicate that there is some water in the north area, we're going to open it up a little bit more.
I have a neighbor that has a field that he irrigates that is north of Highway 199.
What's 199?
The main road that goes from 36 to Dugway.
Okay, yeah.
And he has approximately 1,000 GPM at the very first of the spring. So May, June, by July, he starts sucking air and then backs the pump down to 600 gallons per minute or less because he just doesn't have the water to sustain what he's trying to irrigate.
How
deep is the well?
165 feet.
So if there was other applications that water was appropriated to somebody else, it would be on us to drill our wells deeper to get more water to sustain what we're doing because somebody else took our water and we've been there historically for many years and no problems, and then we give our water away and it's on us to go find it and go deeper at more of an expense to us.
It is. It's a concern we have too that would happen. There. So, I mean, it's interesting. So it seems like there's a pretty seasonal connection to that, or at least to that depth in the aquifer.
I have other property that I own myself that's in the bottom of the valley. It's all meadow grass. For several years on Meadow Lane in Rush Valley, so from 36 back to the Mormon Trail, in that area, there used to be standing water, surface water, for all along Meadow Lane. There's no more water. There hasn't been water for 10, 12 years next to the road. All those meadows are drying up year after year, and they're growing salt grass. in those meadows because there is no surface water, and there are wells that's drilled suntan. They have a well that's drilled in that meadow type area, and they're taking our surface water to where we're not even going to have grass. It's available to grow in those locations.
Great, thank you. Yeah.
There's another well of a gentleman that drilled a well that was 200 feet deep off of Mormon Trail and Meadow Lane. 200 feet. He got 3 gallons a minute.
Wow.
Not able, you know. So there's just, and a lot of them wells along Main Street in St. John are hand-dug 40-foot wells. If we go deeper than 40 feet, we get into that brackish, blue, sulfur water. So it's very volatile that we can't go deeper.
Yeah.
We can't do anything to get better water in those areas.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about the brackish water. I mean, that's one thing that that we have heard reports of. What can you tell us about that? So it sounds like we've got some in St. John area,
yeah.
Right? And if you go deeper than, what, about 60, 70 feet, you start to get into that?
Yep.
Is that what others have found, too? Is it all through the St. John area, or are there other areas that that you get into that? I found a well logged down towards Rush Lake that had that. But I think we're talking some of the really old wells, like you say, hand-dug wells.
Yeah, they're hand-dug, like 40 feet deep, between 40 and 50 feet deep.
Yeah.
Well, these latest few wells they drilled there in St. John, they have a hard time getting to pass usage.
Twill County's implementing some filtration
requirements
on the last few
that
have been drilled there in Rush Valley on the just outside of the St. John block is where they. They are in between St. John, well, Center Street and Highway 199.
Yeah. Okay.
On my place, my main well, that one that I told you was would flow, that water is surf. It's not deep. It's like 60 feet. That's it. We went 700 feet. There was no more water down there. It was all. Like at 60 feet.
And where is your farm? I think I know, but
just west of Old Rush Lake.
Okay, and you're south of South Rim Road? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Silver Avenue.
Okay, Silver Avenue. Okay. Yeah, and I think your farm was one that we used to arrive to see that. Yeah, there's definitely more than.
And then
600.
I drilled a well further south years ago, and that water was brackish. I don't use that well because it had it. Yeah, it wasn't. I put that on my crops and it turned all the leaves, so I can't use that one.
Yeah.
So based on the concerns that you've been hearing, and knowing that some of your data isn't accurate, and we have a dry year this year, would you consider postponing the changes? And studying this a little further and getting more time to get some of the residents' comments before you move forward with the proposal.
Well, that is definitely the objective of this, and so we would like to hear your opinions. And you know, please write us, email us, let us know your thoughts here. You know, I guess we'll take all of that into consideration. We will. Come over here. Yeah.
So, is this the extent of those changes, or are there other changes that we're just not discussing here?
This is the extent. There's nothing else proposed right now for the Rush Valley area.
And what we're seeing, and we've been pretty conservative in Rush Valley over the years, and for consistently done that for the last 20 or so years. We've had a study done that says, hey, there's a lot of water out here, and that's not my experience. And there's problems associated with that. And so we've gotten pressure from people applying applications for this, what seems to be excess water, and I'm just not comfortable going ahead with that. So I said, what do we do? So let's still try to be conservative, let people develop water and use water, but do it in a conservative manner. But let's get comfortable with this amount of water, if there in fact is excess water. And Mike and staff have done a good job trying to estimate where things are. But as you did that, we're finding things that just weren't included in the study that caused me even more concern about what we should do. You know, and do we wait? Do we stay with the policy just the way it is? And maybe that's where we end up. We do not have to change the policy, okay? But information that we are pulling, even with some inaccurate things, we're finding the reports that looks like there is. I mean, you look at the well levels, and they're kind of doing this over time, which says there's not really an overdraw on the aquifer. So there may be something there. But I didn't feel right to have people say, well, look at a study, and let's just let somebody develop that, because we've been telling everybody no for many years that you can only do this just a small amount. So everybody ought to have an equal opportunity, I think, in the best public interest to be able to step up and do that. So how do we do it? One, I want to be very conservative. I don't want to impact your existing wells or your ability to provide livelihoods. But if there is water there, we ought to give people the opportunity to use it. But we need to conservatively move into that. So how? And that's what I put before staff. How do we do that? How do we come up with a plan? And so looking at the things we've got, this is one of the recommendations they came up with. That look, this is the way we can do it. In some areas, we think there's just no water. But yet, if you want to build a home, you ought to have the right to be able to put a home and live there. But one area in Vernon, we're saying, well, let's just stay the way we've always been. So one area get a little more restrictive, one we're staying the same one. We're saying things seem to indicate there's more water there, but we're not totally comfortable with everything we're seeing. But if people want to use it, then let's find a way to open it up so everybody can use that water. But that would require, there was a little bit of discussion, if you're going to use that water, then everybody would have to come in and kind of start over with a new application. And do we want to allow multiple applications for that amount? Let one person come in and buy all of what we might, the excess water up. I don't think that's the best plan either. And so it ought to be spread around somehow. So that's, we're just looking for input on what you think should be done with your valley and how we best help. And we've committed to continue to look at this because we just don't know that we're where we need to be with the right numbers yet.
This is just a suggestion. But to my mind, it's, you know, there's just not a heck of a lot there in terms of development, in terms of water in the southwestern, both the southeastern and in the Vernon area. It's mostly in the northern part. And, you know, the issue that I'm sitting there, you know, hearing people's comments, looking at, reading the report, is there's just not enough data. In other words, you know, you're basing the amounts of, you know, this data on, you know, so many wells. Wouldn't it be easier just to go to the individual water companies and get the information from the wells themselves? Maybe like over a 2-year period even? I mean, every single day, well, I mean, even the hand-dug ones, I mean, they still count their data points, how deep and how much they pull. I mean, there is some in the report, but it's not much. And some of the data dates back to the 70s.
Yeah. Well, and some of that would be extremely laborious. Don't get every single well in the valley. So some of that might be a little too difficult to do, but can we arrive at a better estimate? I think we probably can. Yeah. But I guess, well, it does change some of the numbers. I don't know that there would be enough pumping to completely, especially in that north area, to say that, all right, well, that surplus is completely gone. It doesn't seem like that's the order of magnitude that we're working with. So, I mean, that's the thing to think about, all right? So, you know, if we go with the study, it says that there's some water. Now what do we do with it? Like Pam was saying, what level of development are we comfortable with in that north part of the valley? Right here. Do you have a question?
So, do I understand it correctly, the three areas you can't move water in or out? So is it what's there is there, is that right?
Yeah, what's there would be there, yeah, if this is adopted.
So what about right now if someone filed from the northern to the Vernon or vice versa, how would you?
Well, if we adopt the policy, I mean, as of right now,
then the policy would be that it stays in that sub area from this night forward. I mean, that'll be the state engineer policy.
But we haven't done it.
But we haven't done that yet.
But that would
so
be
right
for.
Right now, you can move it throughout Rush Valley.
Okay. So right now, you can. Yeah, the policy as it sits currently.
And that would be for the point of diversion, only just moving that point of diversion from one zone to another zone. It wouldn't preclude you from having a point of diversion in one zone and pumping water out and moving it somewhere else.
Yeah.
But it would preclude you from taking a point of diversion, moving that to bring the water up out of a different sub-basin.
So the individual who has asked for X amount of water here, and if this policy goes, then do they have to reapply and they're going, if they can only have the same amount of water that all of us as individuals can have?
Well, all right, we're talking about one of the large application or a series of forum, right?
Correct.
So what we're proposing under this is that we would, and I guess I'm not gonna prejudge those applications, but if it were to be, if we were to process them based on this application, they would be approved for what this policy proposes, which is the 20 acre feet of water.
Okay.
Is what would happen under this.
What's the current policy once you have 4.73 acres? What's the current policy on getting more water after that?
In which area?
In the Rush Valley northern area.
So even today, even over the past few years, you could, if you had a water right for 4.73, you could submit proof and then file a new application appropriate for another 4.73 acre foot application at that time. And we have a few people that have been doing that have been building a portfolio of water rights by working in that stepwise fashion. It's actually how we intended the present policy to function, is that we have this kind of stepwise development so that we didn't overtax the aquifer too bad, because at the time we thought there wasn't a lot of water. Now the study comes along and says that maybe it's not as bad as what we think. Now what do we do? And that's what we're here for today.
But we're not going to keep going until we reach a mathematical evaluation. We're going to watch every year. We're watching these well levels. We're watching what's happened. If we start seeing impact or things occurring, we'll just shut things right off. Okay, We're not going to say, okay, just because the math shows that there's 14,000, that's not where we're going. We're going. We want to be.
People are telling you here tonight that that has already happened.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hearing. And that's why we wanted to have this. We want to hear more about that. And so as you comment to us here, and as you send things in to us, we want to hear about those kinds of things, to make sure we're being as conservative as we need to be out here and protect the existing rights.
Years ago, Tool City bought the old Alabama Ranch for the future use for water. Could they, now that this new policy is coming up, could they transfer that water from the Melba Ann and Vernon to Tool City? Could they pipe it all the way in?
You could pipe it. Yeah, and I think Ken's talked about that. If you wanted to pump it, in this case, pump it from Vernon, and then by pipeline, take it down to Tula City, that would be possible. Yeah.
You can use a water right within the limits of its right. You can't enlarge that right.
Yeah.
So if somebody had a right there, a farm, say any farm in the Vernon area, if they wanted to use that right, say in Stockton, if they wanted to pump it and pipe it all the way to Stockton, they could do that, but they couldn't take the point of diversion from down by Vernon and then move it up by Stockton, drill well by Stockton. You'd have to physically bring the water. And you couldn't bring any more water than was what the impact of that water use in the Vernon area would have been historically based on irrigation there, which means there's a return flow component to the water right in Vernon. You can't take that away from the local users, would have to leave that there so they could only take what was actually lost to the system if you're going to take it out of that area. But they still could do it.
So a question about the types of uses that would be allowed in that northern area. We're starting to see housing developments spill over from Twilla into Rush Valley. So could somebody say, I want to build an 80-house subdivision,
and I think I could supply it for 20 acre feet a year. Could that kind of application be approved under the new policy?
So I think you're talking like a municipal type use type thing. Yeah, and it could be. Yeah, if you were to set up a municipality and have municipal water right, then it could function like that. So we wouldn't restrict on type of use is what we propose anyway. And that's not the policy really in any area that we restrict, but based on type of use.
Y'all just went through that report with us here. And I think all of us have seen it before, and thank you for clarifying a lot of it. I heard uncertainty is a lot questionable. And why on earth would we change a policy based on questionable data?
Well, because it's uncertain, but it's uncertain to a degree, and I think the math and the procedures they've gone through is the best available information we have, and they do show some, you know, they come up with this amount of water, and I guess the convincing aspect that makes us think maybe we need to open it up a little bit in the north is that the discrepancy between the amount of the amount of pumping and that amount of water that's available is so large that that maybe there's an opportunity to open that up a little bit.
Well, if this policy's changed and people go in there and start pumping this 20 acre feet of water, and it fails, we're the ones that pay the price.
Well, and that's what we're here to listen to. It is.
I just want to say I appreciate the state engineer's decision on the applications and the present policy that we've got with the SIPLIS situation that we had with the area out there. I think the present policy is being cautious enough that it's will allow some development, but I'm in Clover, south of Highway 199. Going deeper doesn't seem to be the answer. I know of three wells that have been drilled to 1,000 feet, and this has been in 20 years ago, 30 years ago, some more recently. But there's no more water in going 1,000 feet than there was in the first one was 17 feet. That's where they hit first water. Never had any more in 1,000. And I keep pretty close track of the wells that are being drilled around me right there in our area. And it's questionable as to what they're going to get. A pretty good well in our area, 6 or 8. I mean, you talk about irrigating 1 acre with the present policy. Most people haven't even got an acre that they can irrigate a lawn. I mean, it's usually a small lawn. I know of 2 or 3 people out there that, oh, we've got a lot of water. They started to irrigate, try to irrigate, and they're not irrigating today and haven't been for 5 years or
so. This is all in that Clover area is what you're saying.
And, I mean, the wells, I know of some wells that are 350 feet deep, and you can't pull water up and irrigate with that from that depth and be with 20 gallon a minute. I mean, they're trying to irrigate with very small amounts of water. So I think the present policy is where we need to be. I don't think it needs to be expanded at all. The irrigation wells, most of them are in the very north end of the valley there. There are 2 in the Clover, St. John area, is all there are that are irrigation wells. And I think there's been, and I can't say for sure, but I think one well tends to dry the other well up when they pump very much. I know it's reducing some of the surface area, shallower wells in that area when that well is pumped on a regular basis, why it's drying up some of the other springs and surface water that's available. So I think your policy is, I don't think you're out of line at all. I think the present policy is fine.
So you'd say keep it where it is then.
Well, I raised that up to 20 acre feet of water. You just said, hey, developers, head for Rush Valley.
But I think if several wells around there, I mean, my experience, and we've got some wells, and going deeper isn't the answer, but a pretty good well. I mean, I've got two stock wells that if they'll pump 7 or 8 gallon a minute, well, that's all we're getting out of them. That's all we can pump. And it's sufficient if we put in big enough tanks to store that water, to water our livestock, you know, their stock water wells. But 7 or 8 gallon a minute's a fairly good well out there. Sibla's got one that's, what, 500 and some feet deep. These guys are using it, and it's, what does it pump, 6, 7 gallon a minute?
Yep, exactly.
So going deeper isn't always the answer. I think we're in a very tight clay formation there. I had a neighbor that applied for 20 wells on 40 acres out there, and I think Mr. Jones, I've talked to him about it, but, you know, they actually applied or gave him the right to drill one well on the 40 acres, and then he had to put that to beneficial use and prove up on it, and, I mean, they denied that application. I mean, 20 wells, but, I mean, there was no way. So I think the present policy as it stands is sufficient to meet the needs.
Other thoughts? Anything else to add?
I'm just not clear on, do we need to, the group here tonight, if we say we think it should remain the policy is, do we still have this 30 days that we better make a response and contact your office saying we don't want it changed? Or is it just going to happen? And if you don't hear anything more from, you know, from now till the 30 days is up, is the new policy just automatically going to take effect? Or do we have to do something to stop it?
Well, we would like to hear from you.
Sounds pretty unanimous.
And I don't know. Do you want to? I mean, I would say that. Well, you know, these are engineering decisions, and so well, I think, you know, the people that live out there definitely has a lot to do with that decision. There is also the balance to be. Be made between what, you know, what the engineering says, and so we have to balance the two, and that balance is difficult to make, and that balance ultimately is made by the state engineer, and he'll determine that balance.
We're back to the point. If we sit here and say we don't want it, we've done nothing, so policy automatically takes over. Is this what I'm hearing? The new policy will come into effect if we don't do something, but I'm not understanding. We've told you we don't want the new policy, but it's not going to do the job. What do we need to do to say, hey, you don't have sufficient data, that's accurate data that's really reflecting what's happening right now. The 7 years is drier than normal. Soldier Canyon Irrigation Company, we're stock watering only right now. For the last 6 weeks, we are not watering any irrigation. So that is an obvious point to me that we don't have the water that this study is indicating that we have.
And anything that's been said here tonight or brought up is not going to be ignored. It's something that we're going to have to talk about now about where we're going to go. We are not going to implement the policy until we send out a notice against anyone not working at that. That we need to gather some additional information, and we've been concerned about that. We've been looking at it because we've had people say, okay, it's there, give it to us. And, you know, I'm not comfortable with that, and I haven't been for many, many years. Okay, but it would be better if we had something on record. And we do have a recording of these procedures, so we've got that. But if you could put things in writing to us and get it to us so that we've got a file, so that would be very helpful for us as we move forward with this. Yeah.
So you want us to write to this address, state our concern that we want to remain with the current
I think
policy.
That would be a great thing to do.
And
yes.
I think what will happen, what beneficial is that if these people with the wells that you can't pump,
If they could put that data in their letter, that would help make the decision.
That would be excellent to get that kind of information. I mean, I've been telling this. I've been involved with Division of Water Rights for about 38 years. And early in my career, I was hearing stories about this brackish water, blue clay, and you can't go deeper. Our wells are where they are. Don't let people mess that up. And I shared that. And there is not a lot of data out there available to show what's happening through the valley.
Then how can we change to a policy that, if there's not enough data to support that, how do we change to a policy that says, okay, now you can have basically 20 acre feet when you're listening to all these individuals say, well, we don't.
Okay, and I don't know if all of the individuals are they all, is everybody in that northern region? Is that where all those wells are?
Yeah, in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing I'm struggling with. I've got one of the preeminent water study groups in the nation who's come in here and looked at the valley and given us some numbers, and I thought, okay, I need to know what people think about that before I do anything. But based on those numbers that they had and based on us evaluating those and thinking things are a little squirrely, let's come back and see if we can adjust. We've adjusted what we think is a reasonable amount on those numbers, but we're still hearing that there's some things out there that we don't even have involved in that. In that compilation, we're thinking maybe there's a little bit of water we could do it, but I don't want to open it up to thousands of acre feet, you know, for any individual. But conservatively, what should we do? So that, well, 20 acre feet, if there's this much, 20 acre feet is probably conservative, but if this is only 10 acre feet, to do 20 acre feet might give twice as much waterway than what's actually even there. So what I'm hearing generally from the group here is that we need to be conservative, but maybe where we are is where we need to be. But that's what I'm interested in.
My question is, when we sent this to the Division of Water Rights and it says attention Rush Valley groundwater policy, who's the person that gets it? Who's the actual person?
When it's labeled like that, it will go to James Greer and his staff, and it will be shared with all of the rest of us. So that he compiles it in his technical services section, pulls all the information together, and we will just combine everything together and look at all of those comments and evaluate those comments the best we can.
Could you put that slide back up, sir?
Can I just have a little bit of info? Sorry, yes.
I think overall, the policy makes sense.
Oops, there we go.
I was just going to say, overall, I think the policy makes sense, but probably the borders for the actual areas where people might not be correctly created, because some people, there's no available water, and for example, where we're at, there's probably plenty of water, but probably the policy is fine, just the borders need to be revised.
And where are you?
I'm at Big Hollow.
Where's Big Hollow?
It's up near the
camp. In the mountains.
Up above Rush Valley?
Yes.
Okay.
Go back to the water coming out of 0.1 CFS.
Okay.
Different units.
Okay.
What we're using now.
Keep going up to the 4.73 policy. And yeah, there was appropriations added within the years. The storyline probably hasn't changed much, but you can't. People are telling you they physically can't produce 4.73 acres of water through the wells. And so today we almost proposed to increase the appropriations by four times. In another 10, 15 years, the story's going to be the same. We can't physically produce that much water. But the studies are going to keep saying, well, there's all this water that you're not using. So in 10 years, we'll say, well, we're going to change the policy and that. We're going to get to 40, 50 acres. You know, you keep creeping up, but physically you can't use the way you have.
Yeah. Well, and it's a
it's actually kind of a unique situation of what we see, what the data says, where we don't see wells declining, you know, as we talked about. We have a study that says there's water, and yet Kent knows from his years working at the division that these problems are not uncommon for Rush Valley. And then we hear from you guys tonight the same thing that I think Ken has been hearing for decades. And so, you know, we've got two different stories, I guess, coming across here. And so we're trying, I guess that's that balance that we're going to have with the bridge.
And so when
Will
you know that there's water there? Notify, okay, so we submit our comments and everything, and you evaluate all that. And I know you said you would post the policy on your website there, but because we've all signed that login sheet, that sign-in sheet, will we get notification also in the mail? Or is it upon us to go look at the website on December 9th?
What would we typically do with this? Would we send out something to all of the attendees?
We would send notice out to all of the attendees.
Yeah. So make sure you're on that.
James?
Yeah, and it's not like on December 10th we make a decision that
no,
this is the policy.
Yeah.
Like, we'll collect those comments, and then after that we'll evaluate all those comments and look at them and determine maybe this needs to change, or
maybe
it doesn't.
Need to study something.
Or maybe we need to study some more based on those comments. And like someone said before, real data really helps, right? If there's data that shows, yeah, my water level, my well's been going down, or this water's been brackish in this area of the valley, really helps us in determining, okay, maybe we need to reevaluate what we're doing here, and we'll take some more time, and we might have another public meeting with some changes or whatnot. It's not like it's just December 9th. It's just to keep the ball moving. That's when we said, let's set a date where we want the comments in.
Do you consult with the county? I mean, when people are drilling wells out there, the county's coming and evaluating them and telling us what the contents of them are, whether they're, you know, what all their elements are. Do you ever consult them to say what's happening with the wells out there?
From like a water quality standpoint?
Yeah.
And see, there isn't really a mechanism for that to be conveyed to us.
Can't you just call them?
No, obviously based on what we're hearing tonight, it's something we need to look
at.
And we have met with the county in the past.
About every time to evaluate those tests.
Okay. And maybe that's the missing aspect that we need to develop. Is try to establish that water quality side of things.
And the frustrating thing about it is we're not hydrologists. We don't have, and we're not rich enough to drill these 1,000-foot wells or wherever you say we have to go to get the water. All we've got is anecdotal information that we're trying to give you, and it's like we can't compete with that.
I had a question just on the, you said this is a long-term process. All the data that's collected in the numbers, is it based on like a 50-year average? Because those were kind of the years that were documented, but we're in a historically dry, you know, decade or whatever. And so if those numbers were really high 50 years ago and they're really low right now, it would make sense that we should be more, you know, consolidated. I realize it's long-term, but, you know, if we have no water for 7 years,
yeah,
then 40 years ago we had a ton. Well, that's going to average it out and say there's a lot of water.
What's the precipitation that is that in the study? Do we know that?
Yeah, the recharge estimates went out. They're done on long-term averages, 30, 40 years averages, yes.
Right. So what happens when we haven't had any rain for so long, but now they're all really low, and is this the best time to be upping, you know, what we're policy changing, where we're really in a low 7 years? You know, maybe we should wait till we've had a couple good years and then kind of look at where we're at and decide to make a policy change.
That's a good point, good observation.
Well, I say this is the new normal. It's not a drought no more. This is the new
normal. Yeah, because what if we don't get that?
I sure hope we aren't. it's been a really, really bad year, and that you guys are on the forefront of it, you know.
The farming that is done in the St. John area is mostly all done off of Clover Creek, off of that type of irrigation. It's not by deep well pumping like the Hogan family has. There's only two wells.
Another comment on that is the 30% that you said would be recharged from irrigation, it's all been sprinkler irrigated since, 1977. So I don't think there's very much recharge from because it is sprinkling, no flood irrigating at all. I think it's being pretty well utilized.
Pretty much put on this way.
Yeah.
Just what you need.
Yeah.
This year I watered one field, and like I always do, and I went out there to cut it, and there wasn't nothing there.
It's easier to cut that way.
Yeah, I turned the cows in.
Thank you so much for your comments. Again, it's really important for us to hear from you. We want to be able to consider everything that we need to be considering here. We know there are questions that we don't have really good answers to, but yet we want to give people the opportunity to move forward. If you want to move forward, then be real careful. But let us hear about the things that you're experiencing so that we can make that part of the record and we can help make a decision then to work with everybody. Part of my responsibility is to make decisions based on the best public welfare. But it's also my responsibility to put the waters of the state to their most beneficial use, too, and to use the water that's there, we ought to be able to use it. I've had people call me and complain saying that the city is drying up their well, and we've gone out to investigate, and the city had an approved new well, but they just drove the well driller truck into the site and parked the drilling truck. And the people started calling, saying their wells were getting impacted. It's a really heavy truck and squeezing them out. I said, "How can that happen?" People can complain, and we do have a lot of people complain every day about things. And this year, particularly, has been a bad year around the state. It's not just here; it's just around the state. It's really dry. But James mentioned about data and the more we can get, the more records you can keep to show what's happening and the impacts. It just helps us a lot. It helps me make better decisions. And that's why we wanted to gather people together and why I'm really glad you're here to talk about this, to help my staff understand some of the concerns, but then to give you the opportunity to comment before we do adopt a policy. We propose something that is not adopted. We're not going to get more liberal than this. We may get more conservative, we may stay where we are, but we need your input on that. So I just appreciate you taking the time to be here, and hopefully you'll take the time just to comment to us and get us some information so that we can consider that. So I hate to keep you all night. I mean, I like talking water. I've had a great career, and I've really enjoyed doing this, but I know you probably have other things you would like to enjoy, but thank you so much for being here. And 2 hours.